on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Good evening. You're listening to Body Talk here on Phoenix 98 FM with me, Mel Watson. And I hope you're all staying fit and healthy. And if you're not feeling so healthy at the moment, I hope you're looking after yourself and you're able to get the medical assistance that you need at this time. Very concerning times that we live in, but there are things that we can do to help us stay fit and healthy, even though we can't go outside. I know there's been loads of different online classes that have sprung up all over the place and different things that people are doing to help them stay fit and healthy. And also, not eating too much, not drinking too much. Very easy to do in these times, but yeah, we've got to do the best we can, really, haven't we? So I'll be talking about some other things other than the virus to start with, our usual news roundup, and then of course I shall be coming on to some things that we can do to help us stay fit and keep us healthy in these troubling times. Right, so first of all, our news roundup. Now, how long could people actually expect to live in normal circumstances? Now, the latest research is putting it at between 400 and 500 years. Wow. Scientists have identified cellular pathways that could make it a reality. Anti-aging science has focused on finding the single gene that could help us live longer. But the new research has determined it's not one gene, but two cellular pathways that determine longevity. And these pathways have a magnified effect when they work together. Researchers in the Mount Desert Island Biological Laboratory in the US and Nanjing University in China have manipulated the two pathways, which are IIS, insulin signalling, and TOR, nutrient sensing, and calculated that although the individual effects of the two pathways amounted to a 130% improvement in longevity, their combined effect means that longevity actually improved by 500% in their experiments. Applied to humans, this would give us the capacity to live for 400 to 500 years. I can hardly believe that. Can you imagine what we'd look like at 400 or 500 years old? But yeah, unless there's some kind of youthful thing that prevents the skin from aging, I think we'd all look very old and leathery at that point, wouldn't we? But the synergistic extension is really wild, apparently. The effect isn't 1 plus 1 equals 2, it's 1 plus 1 equals 5. In order to develop the most effective anti-aging treatments, longevity has to be, or longevity networks have to be looked at rather than individual pathways. And the discovery opens the door to a range of longevity therapies, some drug-based and some not, that focus on the pathways and their interplay. And furthermore, the researchers agree with earlier findings that the mitochondria play a key role in aging, and dysfunctional mitochondria speed the usual symptoms of aging. Wow. Can you imagine, though, if everybody lived to 500 years old? I don't think we'd have anywhere to move, would we? We'd be like shoulder to shoulder with each other if everybody lived that long. Goodness me. But that's quite some incredible research, though, isn't it? If it's actually correct, and if the laboratory workers have got their sums right, shall we say. But it's fascinating, isn't it? And it isn't only possible for us to slow biological signs of aging. We may be able to reverse them, apparently. Researchers have identified four markers of bodily aging, and people who change their lifestyles have reversed several of these, at least for a little while. Now, a research team from Stanford University School of Medicine has proposed there are four biological pathways that regulate the aging process, controlling the metabolism, immune system, liver and kidneys. They measured the pathways in 43 healthy men and women for 2 years and discovered that some of the participants weren't showing any signs of biological aging, and some were seeing their markers reversing, even for a short time, when they changed their lifestyle, such as through diet or exercise. And reversals were usually found in kidney function. Now, one of the biggest impacts on aging was insulin resistance, the body's inability to properly break down blood sugars. Now, it was a bit disappointing, apparently, in these tests to see that aging was starting to go at a pretty average rate. So lifting weights and exercising and things like that might be able to make a difference, but the scientists aren't sure yet. But more good research, obviously. Long may it continue. And Of course, we've all known that yoga is good for you, and now Western experts finally agree. Yes, yoga is good for you, and especially for your brain as you get older. Although Hatha yoga, the exercise-based yoga, has many physical benefits such as flexibility and muscle strengthening, researchers from the University of Illinois wanted to find out how it impacted brain health. They took another look at 11 studies where participants' brains were monitored with MRI scans while they took part in courses of yoga, and discovered the exercises were helping to maintain the hippocampus, which is associated with memory processing. Now, the hippocampus can shrink as we get older, affecting our ability to remember events, and it's often the first structure in the brain that deteriorates with dementia and Alzheimer's. Now, another area of the brain, the amygdala, which helps regulate emotions, tended to be larger in people who practiced yoga, as were the prefrontal cortex, cingulate cortex, and some of the brain's networks, the researchers said. The prefrontal cortex helps us plan and make decisions. And the brain's physical improvements were played out in cognitive tests, where yoga practitioners often outperformed people who didn't use the exercise. Yay, top marks to yoga. That's what I say. It really is so good for you. Having practiced it for many, many years now, since I was a teenager, I think it's an amazing exercise, and there's always something new to learn with it. New movements, new positions, something new about your body. It isn't just about exercise either. It's about meditation, it's about breathing, it's about your body's energy, dietary needs, everything. It covers everything. So if you haven't already looked into yoga, now is a good time to start, I reckon. And if you have a sweet tooth, drink some coffee, because it may help you keep off the pounds. Coffee and other caffeinated drinks help reduce the amount of body fat you accumulate, even if you like your cake and cookies and other processed sugary food. And so far, it's an approach that's been tested only on laboratory rats, so nobody can be sure the same results will be seen in people, but it's looking encouraging. In their tests, researchers from the University of Illinois discovered that the rats given caffeinated drinks gained 16% less weight and accumulated 22% less body fat than other rats that weren't given the drink, even though both groups ate exactly the same sugary foods. Eat coffee. I've been drinking tea. It's obviously coffee that's the good one for you, isn't it? So I'm going to change to coffee. I don't know. I think coffee is one of those things. I don't know. For me, I go in phases with it. Sometimes I like it. Sometimes I don't. I'm going through a tea phase at the moment, so maybe that ought to change, especially if I'm going to be eating cakes. And if you suffer from chronic depression, stop eating sweet and sugary stuff. Foods with processed sugar can trigger inflammation, and this can cause depression, researchers say. It's a vicious circle, because you often reach for the sweet jar to lift your depression, which always seems worse in the winter. But those sweets are a false friend that lifts your mood momentarily, but ends up triggering a depressive episode. Now, physiologically, processed sugars cause inflammation and weight gain. Two factors that also make people feel more depressed. Like alcohol, sugars can be addictive and act like a drug, researchers from the University of Kansas say. Processed foods are responsible for 10% of depressive episodes, the researchers estimate, and the problem is worse in the winter months, where the lack of sunlight interferes with our sleep patterns. Around 30% of people suffer some symptoms of winter onset depression, and the best way to cope is by eating a diet rich in plant-based foods and omega-3 fatty acids, so healthy diet. And losing weight after the age of 50 is one way to reduce your chances of breast cancer. Although it's been well established that being overweight or obese raises the likelihood of breast cancer, nobody was sure if shedding the pounds would reduce the risk. However, according to a new review of the evidence, there seems to be a direct link between the amount of weight lost and the reduction in risk. The greatest risk reduction was 26% for those who lost 20 pounds or more, but women who lost much less, between 4 and 10 pounds, still reduced their risk by 13%. But the weight loss had no effect on women who were taking HRT after menopause, and their risk remained the same. So that reinforces earlier studies that found the drug is an independent risk factor for breast cancer. And researchers in the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health analysed studies involving more than 180,000 women who were aged 50 or older. So that's a very good cross-section of people there. And lavender, rosemary and ylang ylang essential oils help speed wound healing, and so can a few herbs and spices such as black pepper. They all contain the chemical compound beta-carotene, the active ingredient that gives them their healing qualities. The compound not only heals wounds faster, it also reduces the chances of scar tissue. The oils are natural anti-inflammatories and they help new cells grow. Researchers from Indiana University think the oils speed the healing process by shortening the inflammatory phase of the wound. And lavender also contains linalool, which is a compound that helps ease anxiety. And lavender is one that's commonly used, and I know I use it myself a lot in sort of like keeping calm, etc. But not everybody likes lavender, do they? So if they don't like lavender, then choose something else that makes you feel a little more comforted and a little less anxious in these times. So we're going to take a little break now, and after the break, yes, I'm going to be talking about coronavirus and what we can do to stay fit and healthy. So stay tuned for more right after this.
Community Radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Body Talk here on Phoenix 98 FM with me, Mel Watson. So, what can we do to keep fit and healthy while we're staying at home? So exercise is the obvious number one thing, and that's the buzzword, I think, at the moment. Everybody's talking about exercising at home. And using muscles during exercise has an anti-inflammatory effect and helps immune cells, called neutrophils, to get to an infection site quicker. It also helps other immune cells called macrophages, which are guard cells that patrol the body for signs of attack, and it helps them function better. Exercise can reduce the effects of aging on the immune system. A study of 125 cyclists aged 55 to 79 found they had immune systems of people decades younger. That was reported in the journal Aging Cell in 2018. Now, the thymus, which is a gland with two lobes behind the breastbone, which makes immune cells called T cells, starts to shrink from the age of 20 and makes fewer T cells. In this particular study, the cyclist thymuses were making as many T cells as those of a young person. That's good, isn't it? And another study by the University of Birmingham involved 200 people over the age of 65, found those who regularly walked 10,000 steps a day had the neutrophil function of a person in their 20s. Any regular exercise that gets your heart rate up seems to be able to turn back the clock of the immune system. We don't know how little you have to do to make this happen, although 10,000 steps a day seems to be enough to get neutrophils circulating around the body. But any exercise is better than none. You need to move as much as possible, even if it's only getting up and down a few times in an armchair every hour, or walking up and down the stairs a couple of times a day. That's not difficult to do. And a diet high in salt may reduce the efficiency of the immune system, according to a study published last week. When scientists fed mice a high salt diet, they became more prone to bacterial infections. And when human volunteers doubled the recommended 6 grams a day intake of salt, the amount in two portions of burgers and chips, their immune systems got worse at fighting off bacteria. So the authors of the study, published in the journal Science Translational Medicine, said the body creates hormones to remove excess salt and glucocorticoids, which is a group of hormones that have an immune-suppressing effect. And excessive salt is also known to potentially increase a certain type of cell called T helper 17 cells, which increases potentially harmful inflammation. That's according to the University of Sussex. So people should be careful not to eat too much as well, as becoming obese can cause inflammation in the body. That's according to the British, a representative of the British Society of Immunology. Fat cells produce toxic chemicals that can affect the body's immune response, and we liken the effect of these chemicals to friendly fire. However, older people shouldn't cut back. There aren't many people in their 80s who are overweight, and it's possibly because their metabolism changes, so they need their calories and shouldn't restrict them. But younger people should keep to a healthy weight. And while it's tempting to have a few drinks in this current lockdown, excess alcohol is no good for the immune system. Drinking to excess can affect production of immune cells produced in the bone marrow, and these are needed to replace older cells that are less effective. And when scientists exposed white blood cells in a laboratory to the equivalent of 5 units of alcohol, which is roughly 3 glasses of wine every day for a week, the cells produced 75% less of a molecule called type 1 interferon, which is critical to mounting an antiviral response. That's according to the journal BMC Immunology in 2011. Alcohol is also a sleep disruptor, and poor sleep quality can also impair immunity. Excess alcohol can also damage the lining of the gut, where 70% of the body's immune system is located. So stick to the current government recommendation of no more than 14 units of alcohol per week. And if you can, get outside, because vitamin D has lots of good effects on the immune system. Many people in the UK are deficient at this time of year because the body needs exposure to sunlight to make it. So a supplement is useful. The recommended daily dose is 10 micrograms a day in winter, as the sun isn't strong enough in the UK for the body to produce its own. You can get some vitamin D from your diet, but it's hard to get enough from food alone, and you would need to eat large amounts of shiitake mushrooms and oily fish, for example. And a 2016 study in the Journal of the American Geriatric Society found older people in care homes given high doses of vitamin D, equivalent to 90 micrograms per week, were 40% less likely to suffer acute respiratory illness. So I know we're not allowed out for more than half an hour's exercise per day, but if you can, just get out into your garden, into the sunshine, do a little bit of gardening or something like that to try and top up those vitamin D levels, if you can. I know it's not always possible. Sometimes it'll be a bit chilly outside. And around 7 million people in the UK take cholesterol-lowering drugs called statins, and this may have unexpected benefits for their immune systems. A study of 64 patients at the University of Birmingham found that those aged over 55, hospitalised with pneumonia, who were given 80 milligrams of simvastatin daily for 7 days, had a higher neutrophil function than those given a placebo. The study in the American Journal of Respiratory and Critical Care Medicine last year also found that after a year, those in the statin group had a lower death rate than those in the placebo group. Now, as we age, neutrophils are slower to reach the site of infection, and when they get there, they're less effective at killing the infection. However, in this study, statins seem to rejuvenate the neutrophils. This hasn't been adapted as standard practice yet because larger studies are needed to confirm the findings. But if you are prescribed statins, obviously do continue to take them. And despite the hype around certain foods, there is no superfood that boosts your immune system on its own. That's according to dietitians at King's College London. What is important is feeding your gut microbiota, the trillions of microbes that call your intestine home. Your microbiota has been linked with stronger immunity and plays a key role in training, maintaining and supporting the immune system. And to maintain this health, eat a wide variety of plant-based foods. The more variety, the better. Vegetables, fruit, whole grains, legumes, which are beans and pulses, nuts and seeds. Frozen, tinned and all dried, and dried all count, go for different colours. Red and yellow peppers, green and black grapes, and that way you'll be feeding your diversely skilled team of microbes each their preferred foods. And older people aged 55 to 87 who took zinc supplements had lower rates of infection than those taking a placebo, according to a study in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition in 2007. There is some evidence that zinc is good for the immune system, but it's not known how much is beneficial and for how long you should take it. The NHS recommends that men get 9.5 milligrams a day and women 7 milligrams, and zinc is found in meat, shellfish, dairy products and fortified cereals. And I'm taking my zinc supplements and my vitamin C supplements just in case. I think you can't be too careful these days, and these kinds of supplements really aren't going to hurt, are they? And certainly, touch wood, I'm touching wood on every level at this moment. I'm fit and healthy so far, so I think perhaps upping the vitamins, keeping a healthy diet is the best way to stay fit and healthy under any circumstances. And talking about your fitness levels when you can't even get out of the house might seem a little bit odd. Now, if you can get your head around technology, there's nothing to stop you enjoying the social aspect of exercising as well, because there are lots of live classes that you can take part in and apps that allow you to compete against friends and family and social media where you can share your achievements as well. And you don't need expensive gym equipment either. You just make use of what you have at home, using a chair for arm dips or tights instead of a fitness band, for example. And with physical fitness closely linked to mental health, it's more important now when you're socially isolated than ever. So the good news is that it's never really too late. Even if the last time you did something that might be considered active was decades ago, you can start today, now, and it will have genuinely life-changing effects. Research from the University of Birmingham, published last year in the journal Frontiers in Physiology, looked at people in their 70s and 80s and discovered that those who had never taken part in sustained exercise programs had exactly the same ability to build muscle mass as highly trained athletes of a similar age. Now, however old you are, you can still reap the benefits of becoming fitter, and fitness is more important as you age, not less. So if you're out of shape in your 30s and 40s, you might not be able to run around a football pitch or chase after your kids. But by the time you get to the age of 80, being unfit could be the difference between being able to live independently and unable. After all, if you're not fit enough to climb the stairs or get to the toilet in time, that will have a fundamental impact on your quality of life. When you're fit, you'll have a combination of energy, strength and ease of movement. Your posture will be stable and upright, whether you're sitting or standing. Your body is more resilient and your mind motivated and alert. And there are four aspects of fitness that work together to provide this combination. There's stamina, which is your cardiovascular powerhouse, strength, which is essential for your muscle power, endurance and metabolic health, suppleness required so muscles and joints don't stiffen up, snap or rub, and skill, which is really about maintaining posture, balance and coordination. So every day do something towards increasing all four. Right, we're going to take a little break now, and I'll be back after the break talking about how you can exercise effectively at home. Stay tuned for more after this.
Sometimes I feel I'm gonna break down and cry. Nowhere to go, nothing to do with my time. I get lonely, so lonely, living on my own.
Community Radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Body Talk here on Phoenix 98 FM with me, Mel Watson. So, yes, in these lockdown circumstances, what can we do to help us stay fit and healthy? We keep being told that exercise is good for us, lots of online classes, etc. So there's no excuse really for not keeping ourselves fit and healthy. Now, the gym equipment that you will need, that I would imagine nearly every home has, I'm going to go through that now. So tights. If you're an all-male household, you may not have these, so it might be a little bit more challenging, but maybe a scarf or something like that. But that can make an effective resistance band if it's tied to a door handle or wrapped around a radiator. A pair of tights tied in a loose, stretchy loop to sit just above your knees will intensify the effectiveness of squats. And food as well. Bottles of water and baked bean tins can replicate dumbbells, and clutch a large bag of potatoes to your chest to intensify squats. And books as well. Hold a heavy book to your chest for squats. Push over your head or cradle when lying on your back, knees bent and feet on the floor to intensify abdominal crunches. And buckets as well. Fill two equally sized buckets with sand or earth and thread a broom or mop handle through to create a barbell, which can be used for deadlifts and overhead raises. And a kit bag. Fill an old kit bag with sheets and hang it from a tree or indoor beam to be used as a punch bag. And the stairs, of course, just run up and down for a cardiovascular workout, or use lower steps as a raised platform for conditioning work. And a chair is great for tricep dips, raised push-ups, reverse lunges, leg raises and single leg squats. Brilliant. So there's no excuse, is there? No excuse for not exercising. So activities that increase your pulse and breathing rate help to boost your heart and stimulate your circulation. These are referred to as cardiovascular exercises and can include many ordinary activities such as gardening or housework. Now, the recommendation for adults is a minimum of 30 minutes of moderately intense activity at least 5 days a week, or about 2.5 hours in total. Moderately intense activity makes you breathless but still just able to talk. You don't have to do it all at once. You can spread your daily dose throughout the day and your total through the week. If you've been inactive, work up to your target gradually. Start with mild activities such as walking at ordinary speed, which will only make you breathless if you're very unfit, and increase over 4 weeks to moderate activities such as brisk walking or jogging. Move to more intense activity over the next 2 to 4 months if you can. Walking briskly uphill is great for bone strength, or running. And if you don't have the outdoor space for walking or running, then all you need is a computer, a tablet or a phone with internet connection to do an exercise class from your own sitting room. And strength is the force generated by muscles working to overcome a resistance. That could be the weight of something you lift, or the resistance of an elastic band or a pair of tights that you stretch. And over time, exercising against resistance makes you stronger and improves your energy, metabolism, well-being, resilience, and your overall sense of well-being too. Muscle strength is critical for preventing falls, so reducing the risk of fractures, as powerful muscles can more rapidly correct a wobble before you hit the floor. And this in turn protects your head from impact injuries, saving a lot of brain cells. Muscle strengthening exercises build bone strength too, so fractures are less likely if you do fall, and particularly important for women after menopause when bones and muscles lose strength. If you have weaker bones already, muscle strengthening exercises and brisk walking are great ways of building them back up. And then last but not least, stronger muscles stabilize joints, making them more efficient, and can help you sustain your cardiovascular activity better. If you use simple weights or a resistance band regularly to exercise muscle groups, you will gradually increase their strength. Over time, you will be able to lift heavier objects as you build up to a new level of comfortable maximum muscle strength, and you may also notice your muscles are firmer and more toned. And because you use the muscles of your lower body for walking and dancing, they tend not to need so much strengthening, but pay special attention to your upper body and abdomen or core. Now, dumbbells or weights are the right tools for both forearms and biceps. Exercise bands are also good, and so is the humble press-up. So you can create your own variations. But just to give you an idea, if you stand up straight with good posture and your hands by your sides, have a 1 kilogram or 3 kilogram weight in each arm. So that could be tins of beans or a bag of flour or something like that. Anything that you can find that weighs a reasonable amount. Lift your arms out to your sides slowly until horizontal and slowly lower them again. Don't lose control, and then do this 10 times, rest, and then repeat. And then with the weight in your right hand, stand upright and let your hand hang beside your body. Bend your elbow until your forearm is upright. And now let your hand drop down slowly, always in control. And then change to the left hand and repeat. And then take the same weight in your right hand at shoulder height. Push up gently until your arm is straight. Count to 10, then lower it again slowly. Repeat 5 times, then give the left arm the same treatment. And for core body strength, just lie on your back, hands behind your head. Bend forward, lifting your head and shoulders up 6 inches if you can, and hold that position. Counting to 20 if you can, or aiming to build up to 20 seconds over a month if you can't. And secondly, with hands by your sides, lift your feet 6 inches off the ground, keeping the legs straight. Hold them for up to 20 seconds if you can, or build up to that over a month. Then crisscross your legs 10 times before lowering them slowly. That's quite a challenging one to do. Now, these exercises are good for abdominal muscles, helping with posture and preventing backache. And they also reduce the risk of a hernia developing in the groin. If you already have a hernia, ask your doctor which is the best exercise for it. And then using a chair is always really good. To strengthen the wrists and arms, sit forwards in a chair, extend the legs straight in front, heels to the ground and toes up, and place hands on the arms of the chair and lift your bottom off the seat, keeping your legs straight, lift and lower 10 times. So that's if you've got arms on your chair that you can use. That's a very good one for strengthening the arms. And then there's sit to stand. For thighs and balance, sit tall near the front of the chair, lean slightly forwards with your feet just behind your knees. Use your hands to push up and stand. You can put your hands on your thighs as you get stronger, so no hands at all. And again, repeat that 10 times. To work the legs and the glutes, stand sideways to an upright chair. Hold on with your right hand for support and stretch out your left arm for balance. Point your toes and swing your right leg forwards and then backwards 10 times, and then repeat on the other side. And to encourage balance and stability, stand tall, holding the chair back with both hands. Move your right foot out to the side and back to the center, and do the same with your left foot. Continue stepping side to side for about a minute. And to strengthen biceps, stand with both feet in the centre of a band or tights, with feet slightly apart, with arms at your sides, grip the band with palms facing front, bend elbows and pull your fists up to your shoulders and then relax down, and repeat 10 times. So lots of good advice there for simple exercises that we can do indoors. There's so much that we can do, isn't there, really? Suppleness is the ease with which a joint moves through its full range. It's not floppiness and depends on appropriate muscle tone during rest or activity. And stiffness is the opposite of suppleness and is one of the most common complaints of aging as we get older. We get stiffer more quickly with inactivity, but it can affect us well before our 60s if we're used to sitting for a long time. It's particularly troublesome for women as the structure of connective tissue changes after the menopause, making it less elastic. Now, for supple shoulders, circle your arms backwards, trying to brush your ears as the arms pass. If you have a frozen shoulder, you might not be able to do this at first or any other shoulder problems, but just try it gently. Don't cause yourself pain. This is a deceptively simple but challenging exercise, and repeat 20 times or build up to that. And for a supple neck, move your head in a slow circular motion. Don't push it with your hands. Look right and left over each shoulder as though you're checking for an overtaking car. And don't forget your posture. Imagine a wire from the crown of your head to the ceiling. Stand straight, chin in, not like a tortoise with its head forward and chin out. Keeps your spine in alignment. Then for supple hips, lie on your back with your right knee bent and your right foot on the floor. Rest your left ankle across the knee of the bent leg. Push gently on the left knee and rock it a little away from you. Do this 10 times, then repeat the exercise with the other leg. And for supple knees, stand with feet shoulder width apart, then bend your knees and hips and try to touch the floor with your fingertips without bending your back too much. A little arching is unavoidable. If you can do this, try to put your palms flat on the floor, and that shouldn't cause discomfort. And if putting your palms on the floor does, then just fingertips is fine, or just a little way in the air. Repeat 10 times, then put your feet in further apart and do another 10, and then go for another 10. Now keep your back straight, and for hamstrings and calves, bend forward until you feel your hamstrings, the muscles which are at the back of the leg, stretching. Count to 10, relax and stand up, and then repeat that 5 times. Brilliant, so far so good. I hope you're making notes of all of these movements, or at least trying some of them as I'm going through them. So we're going to take a little break now, and after the break I'm going to be back with more movements you can do at home. Stay tuned for more.
Give a brother room. The fuse is lit and I'm about to go boom. Mercy, mercy, mercy me. My life is a cage, but on stage I'm free. Hyped up, psyched up, ready for wildin'. Standing in a crowd of girls like an island. I see the one I wanna sit. Come here, cutie. I flip her around and then I work that booty. Work the body, work, work the body. Slow down, girl, you're about to hurt somebody. Hold up, yo, let's get just one thing clear. There's only one reason why I came here. Your women don't want me to do it, do it, tell you what's up. Tonight to hear the crowd go boom, shake, shake, shake the room. Boom, shake, shake, shake the room. Boom, shake, shake, shake the room. Tick, 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 boom. Well, yo, are y'all ready for me yet? Pump it up, Prince. Well, yo, are y'all ready for me yet? Pump it up, Prince. Well, yo, are y'all ready for me yet? Pump it up, Prince. Well, here I go, here I go, here I go. Yo, dance in the aisles when the Prince steps to it. The rhyme is a football, y'all, and I went and threw it out in the crowd, and yo, it was a good throw. How do I know? Because the crowd went, response to the way that I was kicking it. Smooth and individual rhymes, always original. Like the Dr. Jekyll, man, and this is my high side. I am the driver, and y'all on a rap ride. So fellas, yeah, are y'all with me? Yeah. I say fellas, yeah, are y'all with me? Yeah. Why don't you tell the girls what y'all wanna do? You wanna ooh, ah, ooh. That's right, yo, and I'm in the flow. So pump up the volume along with the tempo. I want everybody in the house to know I came here tonight to hear the crowd go
boom, shake, shake, shake.
Well, here I go, here I go, here I go. You women and women is giving it to you. You women and women is giving it to you. You women and women is giving it to you. What's up? Well, here I go, here I go, here I go. Yo! That I never make a wag jam. But sometimes I get nervous and start to stutter, and I fumble every word I utter. So I just try to chill. But it gets worse and worse and worse still. I need the crowd to get into it. They help me calm down and I can get through it. So higher, higher, get your hands to the ceiling. Let it go, y'all, don't fight the feeling. Might get a stranglehold, sweat pouring. And like Jordan, yo, I'm scoring. Yeah, that's right, y'all, and I am in the flow. So pump up the volume along with the tempo. Many have died trying to stop my show. I came here tonight to hear the crowd go
boom, shake, shake, shake the room. Boom, shake, shake, shake the room. Boom, shake, shake, shake the room. Tick, 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 tick,
yeah.
Boom, boom, shake, shake, shake the room. Boom, shake, shake, shake the room. Boom, shake, shake, shake the room. Tick, tick, tick.
community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Body Talk here on Phoenix 98 FM with me, Mel Watson. And I'm talking about keeping you fit and healthy while you're staying at home in these troubled times. So we've been going through a lot of exercises for strengthening and stretching. But how about staying in control? Skill, your skill set. The whole point of balance and coordination is to keep you upright, mobile, and safe from falling. So the first thing you need is to be alert. Most of the time, your brain controls your learned movements without you realizing it. But if you don't keep active, you start to lose the connections between nerve cells in your brain and spinal cord. It really is use it or lose it. Do nothing, and you become less able to regain your balance if you stumble. Checking your balance regularly will help you avoid problems further down the line. And the ability to stand on one leg, for example, is a good predictor of future brain health. Now, there's a few exercises that you can do to help your balance. I'm going to go through a few of those first, or a few of those now. But first of all, before you do that, check the floor isn't slippery. And don't do these if you've been drinking alcohol within the last 4 hours either, because your balance will be all over the place anyway if you've consumed alcohol. Now, to begin with, stand on one leg with your eyes open and raise the other, holding it in the air for 30 seconds, and then try the other leg. And can you get to 1 minute on each leg before putting your raised foot down again? And if so, try to rotate your raised foot while you stand on the other leg. See if you can build up to a minute on each leg while rotating the other foot. And then you can try it with your raised leg flexed enough at the hip and knee that you can hug that leg. And is that easier or more difficult? And then you can try that with your eyes closed, but only if you're in a safe place and not on a slippery floor. And you should open your eyes immediately if you feel unsteady. Now, what I always recommend is standing next to a wall to do that kind of thing, because it's much easier. If you lean against a wall, then you're going to be a lot safer. Now, there's no magic set of exercises to avoid boredom. It's very important to try and chop and change all the different exercises. So far I've given you some good ideas, but the key is to do at least 10 minutes of exercises for stamina, strength, skill and suppleness every day. So just try and do a little something if you can to ease the boredom and to keep yourselves fit and healthy. Now, the other thing, apart from exercising our bodies, is thinking about our mental health as well. Very important to stay mentally fit and healthy. And I think stress contagion is already emerging across the country, and levels of anxiety are rising in the population as a result of the pandemic. It's normal and healthy to be anxious, and we mustn't really go telling people to calm down. It's important to say that anxiety is not a mental disorder, but rather a rational response to a scary situation. Now, UK authorities recently feared that Britons were keeping too calm about the virus. They were worried that people weren't anxious enough to make them cooperate with the lockdown measures required to reduce the coronavirus's spread. And the government's reluctance to impose a lockdown had been much criticised. But if the lockdown were imposed too soon, the public would get fed up of life in quarantine and rebel. And in the New England Journal of Medicine, the report says legitimate concerns about the adverse effects of social distancing on some older people's sense of isolation, loneliness and healthcare access led to an argument that social distancing should be delayed as long as possible. But now we're all stuck with it for the duration. The more positive news is that the British population has in the past proved far more resilient than psychologists predicted. There was absolute consensus at the start of World War II that after one bad night of bombing, the population would flee from the cities and we would lose the war. But it didn't happen. In the vast majority of cases, people got used to the new reality very quickly. And the big difference now is that people in World War II were not isolated. Instead, the wartime authorities encouraged social intimacy, keeping cafes, pubs and clubs open. Now, studies of quarantine show that it increases anxiety-related mental health problems, such as clinical depression, and increases symptoms of obsessive-compulsive disorder in people who suffer it. The study data that we currently have is cheering about resilience, but there is a limit to how much pain a society can stand, and we wonder for how long people will go along with this, and hopefully we'll be able to have periodic breaks from lockdown. Oh, it's best for the authorities not to hazard guesses as to when these might be. But the most crucial thing is not to give people false reassurance. If you give people a date and don't stick to it, you get more mental health problems breaking up because they lose crucial trust in what they're being told. So we look as though we're in for a long haul, but the important thing is to keep ourselves fit and healthy mentally as well as physically. And the David Smithson, who's the operations director of the charity Anxiety UK, recommends that when people feel overwhelmed by stress, they focus on the acronym APPLE. A for acknowledge the fearful uncertainty and be mindful of it rather than be gripped by it. Pause rather than reacting fearfully to your feelings. Pull back from all of your worries. Let go of the thought or feeling. And explore the present moment and shift your attention to something non-stressful. That's rather nice, isn't it? Rather a nice thing to do. So that could work. And, you know, it's okay to be frightened as well. This is a scary time. Anxiety is survival. Without it, we'd die by cuddling lions that look cute or juggling with knives. Or, you know, we'd do all sorts of things like that. And we don't want to switch off our anxiety together. Altogether, as our anxiety is useful in guiding us. So don't try and squash it either with excess alcohol or drugs. Let it warn you to wash your hands and to follow government health advice. Let it remind you to call your loved ones. But notice when you're feeling overloaded and need to do something else. Now, when we feel overwhelmed, we should do something physical, such as cleaning cupboards, chopping wood, or doing some press-ups. Last year, a report in the journal Anxiety and Depression found that people with anxiety disorders who reported high-level physical activity were better protected against developing anxiety symptoms than those who reported low physical activity. It's believed that exercise helps through releasing feel-good endorphins, which counteract anxious feelings while also reducing levels of the body's stress hormones, such as adrenaline. Exercise may also shift people's focus away from their worries. And getting outside into nature is a proven stress reducer. A Harvard University report earlier this month in the journal Environment International, for example, studied 100 people and found that even periods of just 6 minutes in natural surroundings reduced their anxiety levels significantly. And the biophilia hypothesis argues that we find nature stress relieving because it's the environment in which we spent long millennia evolving with it, that's for sure. And studies of people swept up in disasters show that they are least traumatized if they're able to keep in touch with their nearest and dearest. A 2017 report in the BMJ on the consequences of the July the 7th London terror attacks, for example, found that fears and anxieties among the general public were largely managed by people turning to their existing social networks. For most people, social support from family, friends, colleagues, or other members of their social network is associated with good mental health. It also added that evidence suggests that when disaster strikes, people are often more concerned about loved ones than themselves. Being unable to contact loved ones after a trauma is associated with higher anxiety, not only in the short term, but also for up to 6 months later. And make the most of social media. It's important to activate your social networks. They can be key to fostering connectedness with people of your choice when you want to. Social media is merely a tool in your armory to be used well or poorly. The same 2017 Arkansas University study, which found Facebook can increase personal anxiety and depression, also reported that it's more likely to increase happiness and good mood through sharing positivity and social support. So use social media activity positively. So organise virtual meetups with friends and family rather than passively just reading posts is better for mental health. And these needn't be limited to chatting. Friends and family can take part in group activities such as watching films or cooking together virtually as well. And communicating feelings with your children is essential. You need to do it as positively as possible rather than just transferring your anxiety onto them. A good way to start is asking them what they know about the situation, how they think other children might be feeling, and ask them how they're finding the situation and tell them how you are feeling about it. When adults share feelings without catastrophizing, of course, they can really benefit youngsters by teaching them to name their feelings and develop some mastery over them. If you fail to acknowledge feelings of anxiety, your brain may keep ramping them up and force you to notice them. And we don't see any evidence of panic at the moment. And, you know, panic, but apart from the panic buying, is pretty awful, really. Now, people have been told to prepare for isolation, so it's perfectly understandable that they will stock up on necessities. But it's also very wrong to tell people not to panic as well. First, because those who are already panicking are unlikely to listen. And secondly, those who aren't will start to wonder if they should. But most importantly, we know that in emergencies, most people don't panic for most of the time. So do try and stay as calm as possible. And try finding fun in the ordinary as well. It's an opportunity for people to play games together, such as board games, or, you know, planting a vegetable patch in the garden, organising photo albums, starting an online course, you know, just doing anything that feels fun, really. And volunteer to help others as well. One of the best ways to get us all through this is to help each other by doing things such as shopping for the elderly, encouraging lots of altruistic behaviour with people helping each other in communities is what we are currently seeing. And such behaviour is believed to boost volunteers' morale as much as the people who are helped as well. So it's great. So, yeah, lots of things that we can be doing to help us through this period of time. And I hope you are staying as fit and as healthy as possible within all of this. And I shall be back with you again next week with some more updates. So until this time next week, take care of your body and take care of yourself. It comes, the change, it goes for you.